Shalom Saints, welcome back to another episode of Upper Room After Hours. Much obliged for you joining me once again. It's good to be back. If you're new around here, this is a space where we look at all manner of topics, current events, and we look at that through a biblical lens to make sense of what is an ever-increasing mad world. If you're new around here, like, subscribe, do the good stuff. For all of you that are familiar with the protocol, strap in, get comfy, stick a brew on, and let's get into this week's topic. We're going to jump straight in this week to an area in which it's been discussed in and around the camp. It's been on the mainstream media for a little while, but I just wanted to have a little dive into this area.
Arla Foods is teaming up with major British retailers to trial a new feed additive that could significantly reduce methane emissions from dairy cows. As part of the project, 30 of Arla's farmers and a number of retail partners, including Morrisons, Aldi and Tesco, will trial the use of Bovair, which reduces methane emissions from cows by 27% on average. If successful, it's hoped more UK farmers will start to use the feed additives. Bovair works by suppressing the enzyme in a cow's stomach that produces methane.
By doing so, less methane is produced and emitted into the atmosphere. However, news of the trial has been met with criticism. Some users on X claimed they would boycott the brand because of the chemicals found in Bovair. Although it has been claimed the additive has no side effects on cows, a report by the Food Standards Agency last year found that a compound in Bovair should be considered corrosive to the eyes, a skin irritant, and potentially harmful by inhalation to humans handling it. But animal nutrition specialist DSM said, in every case, the additive has proven safe to animal farmer and consumer.
Right, so we've got this situation ongoing in the UK at the moment, where a very large company is trialing a product that, from a scientific point of view, will be beneficial to the overall carbon footprint in the realms of farming, in particular dairy farming. It's already been met with a lot of resistance, and there are some conspiracies floating around with regards to the responsibility, who's pulling the strings. But it's been a very real concern about our produce and where we ascertain our foods and things of that nature. And this has been an ongoing situation for a while now, both sides of the pond. I think it's fair to say that from seed to sky, it's hard to look at any industry, any system at this point that hasn't been perverted, coerced, and cajoled into an agenda that's befitting of certain rulers. And even without a conspiratorial cap on it, we know that a lot of industry, a lot of business is driven for profit. That is the nature of a lot of corporations. And quite often we see this drive for profit overruling the benefits of what the actual service is designed for. And so we have a... Now, this is depending on your position with regards to the climate and the things that are taking place in and around that area. The premise seems, let's say, far-fetched, to put it kindly, in terms of if we can stop the cows producing as much methane, then that's going to help the environment somewhat. And the way we do that is that we manipulate the food of which they're eating. And of course, you know, the governing bodies have deemed it to be safe. Because where have we seen this before, where things have been rolled out that have been deemed safe by governing bodies, and subsequently it turns out to be the opposite? So let's take a look.
I'm Jane.
I'm Adam.
And we run a family dairy farm with 420 cows.
We've been Arla members for the last 10 years, and we've been in the Innovation Farm for the last five.
The latest innovation we're looking at is Bovaer. Bovaer is a feed additive developed by Dutch company DSM that allows farmers to reduce enteric methane emissions from our dairy herds, enteric methane being what the cows produce during their natural digestive process. Today, we've been working with Arla and DSM as part of the Bovaer setup process, learning about what's involved and how we can make the pilot as successful as possible. So the reason we're so excited about Bovaer is it's not just some fairy dust that somebody thinks might make some improvements, but it's been really rigorously and extensively tested.
Trials like these are really important to help reduce our carbon footprint.
We're really pleased that customers are joining us in investing in sustainability on farm.
It's hard to know where to begin on this subject, really, to be honest. If we look at things from a biblical perspective, we're familiar through studying the word that agriculture, farming, all of that good stuff is synonymous with the scriptures. Whether it be in parables, metaphor, whether it be the literal lives of protagonists within the word, even just in culture in general and in history, like agriculture and farming is arguably the most important industry, the most important endeavor on earth. Like, you don't have to be a believer to do the maths on this one. And like, history would say that as soon as you start meddling and tinkering with a process that left well alone, it does all right for itself. And the moment that we start intervening, gosh, that's when all hell breaks loose. But part of the difficulty that we have at the moment, from what I can ascertain is that our natural processes, whether it be farming, whether it be the weather, have clearly been infiltrated and are being manipulated. That's so well documented now, and it's like when it's at this point of manipulation, it's hard to ascertain as to where the line is drawn in terms of where it's broken and where it can actually be fixed. And you know, a lot of the things that can be attributed, that are being attributed to, humanity's evil footprint through the misuse of the earth. Now, don't get me wrong, things have been abused and things aren't done right. The overproduction of meat. There's so much that is absolutely wrong, and I'm not here to debate that. What I'm saying is what they're trying to pin things on. And the resolution that they provide for me is, again, it's Hegelian dialect. You know, we're happy to use this system of understanding, whether it be politically, whether it be through wars, whether it be through general media propaganda. But I think it's important to have this same lens when it comes to agriculture and the weather and the climate, etc., is that, you know, the problem reaction solution element, where it's like, yeah, we can help reduce the carbon footprint because we need to do this and that and the other with, and they're actually, I say they loosely, that the problems aren't being caused by natural God-given ordinances. If we just stuck to the script originally, we wouldn't be having to go to these extremes to compensate for them. But again, this notion of progress and helping the world move forward through scientific endeavors, because nature needs a helping hand because of the destruction that's taking place. And today I just wanted to look at the attack on farming in general. Now, again, I'm no farming expert, but I like to look at things with a degree of common sense. And as I said at the beginning, like, if these guys are like putting food on the table, these guys have got trusted, generationally proven methods in what it means to cultivate crops and livestock. Like, I trust these guys, and I think it would make sense as a society to do everything that we can to support these people, because without them, without a good, clean source of food and water and everything else, we're knackered. But obviously, there is things taking place that have, you know, that are usurping and that are clearly manipulating this industry to the point where it's like it's not even hidden. Again, this isn't going to be a big deep dive into the who, what, and the why, because these are all things that we can all take a look at in our own time. But it doesn't take long to like look at these companies. They mention their DSM Firmenich, the Dutch company that are heading this up. We're innovators in nutrition, health, excuse me, and beauty. We bring progress to life. All this language just makes me shudder. I think I've spoken so much about what progress and the falsities thereof lead to, and it's just like, it's just a utopian dream. And utopia is, by definition, a place that just doesn't exist and can't exist. But we're always heading for this place of progress, and we're always making things better because of all of the terrible things that are taking place whilst they're already creating the problems. We already know a thing or two about progress. The countdown is on to tackle the world's biggest problems and meet consumers' ever-evolving needs. As a leading co-creation and innovation partner in nutrition, health, and beauty, we love a challenge. We work at the crossroads of what's essential for life, desirable for society, and sustainable for our planet, always driven by our purpose of bringing progress to life. It's nauseating. It's profit. You're run by bigger corporations that are driven towards an agenda of an economy that's not for the people, in an environment whereby people will not own things anymore. We won't be able to look after ourselves. We'll be fully dependent on the powers that be. And this is another step in this direction. It's always just dressed up really well. The language, even the, like, just the way it looks. Our ambitions may be sky high, but our feet are firmly on the ground. It's like, who are you? Who are you, really? What have you got to do with anything? Honestly. Protein production that powers more sustainable nutrition. Let's make it happen. From healthier livestock to healthier farms and a healthier planet, we help farmers navigate and accelerate the food system transition our world needs. Like, we've had these systems in place that have worked perfectly fine for a very, very long time. God-given, natural, sustainable in its own right. And then we get these companies coming in feeling like they need to save the world and playing Frankenstein with it. It's like, but like a lot of things, I believe in this world, a lot of things can come down to consent. And I think by and large, we are in a time by which responsibility needs to be taken in terms of what we are consuming on all fronts, and doing the best of what we can with what we got, whether it be financial restrictions, whether it be geographical location. We can only do the best with what we've got. However, I do believe there's a lot of consent involved. So for all of this publicity, for all of the kickback that we've seen, you know, I can go into my local supermarket and I can see the Arla counter, it big in lights, and it's like, right, okay, you've told me what you're doing. It's been publicized. I can see the company online and it's there. I can make a choice now. So for all of the palaver, it's, you know, we still, I still hold on to the hope that we've got an element of choice of where we choose or can ascertain our goods and produce. Now, this next video, I think the guy makes some pretty pretty interesting observances, and, you know, for the most part, whether you believe there is a need to save the planet from this climate situation or not, I think this guy makes some very good observations with regards to the financial viability of these endeavors. Quite often, it doesn't take much research to have a look at a lot of these kind of so-called greener elements to energy and resource. A lot of these are actually more expensive, more labor intensive, more damaging to the earth, and would have more of a repercussion on our resources in the long term than existing practices. Now, for you that love going on the deep dive, we're not even going into free energy and Tesla and old world technologies and ways to utilize the electromagnetic field of the, like, there's a lot of that. Okay, so that, with that being said, like, we're dealing with like a very surface level thing here, and it's just aggravating when these things are literally contradictory to common sense and to alternatives. Like, you can look at the way solar panels are made. You can look at wind farms, the even just the amount of concrete that you need. Like, it's a fallacy, this idea of electric being the future. Fallacy. It doesn't take much to see this. We can only, I'm sure this is something we can look at in the future. We're looking at the lithium land grabs as well, which, that's a humdinger of a situation. But anyway, this guy talks about the nonsensical element of the viability of these things.
Let's talk about Bovier and methane inhibitors. Possibly the dumbest way to reduce carbon ever. There has been a massive backlash against Arla over the last few days because they were feeding a small number of their cows a synthetic chemical called 3-nitrooxypropanol, or Bovier. Does it affect milk? Technically, yes. Is it unsafe? Probably not. But the facts don't matter. What is clear is that the public do not want this in their food chain. Arla and the retailers, your customers don't want to take the risk. And as a farmer, I want to say thank you to the British public, because the entire concept of methane inhibitors is fundamentally flawed and was going to cost farmers a fortune. Let me explain. Now, this might take some brain power, but stick with me. I promise you it's worth it. Methane inhibitors offer a capped benefit, but a recurring cost. A combination that is totally unique in the world of carbon reduction strategies. I have a calf has escaped. We'll continue this in 1 second. What is my life sometimes? All right, hold on to his head. Get him. Oh, you got him. As I was saying, methane inhibitors reduce the amount of methane entering the atmosphere. And because methane naturally breaks down to CO2 and water over 12 years, the pool of atmospheric methane gradually reduces. However, after 12 years, the pool of atmospheric methane has stabilized, which means that no further reduction is possible. Hence, you have a capped benefit. However, to maintain that benefit, you have to feed the additive indefinitely, forever. Hence, the recurring cost. So let's compare methane inhibitors to other carbon reduction strategies. Think about replacing a coal-fired power station with renewable energy. Once the coal plant is gone, the benefits keep growing year after year. It is a non-capped recurring benefit strategy. Or what about planting trees? As forests grow, they will capture CO2, but eventually they will reach a saturation point. They are capped. However, they only have a one-time cost up front and not a recurring cost. Methane inhibitors, on the other hand, have a capped benefit after 12 years and yet an incredibly high recurring cost, which is why they are so stupid. If farmers were forced to use methane inhibitors, it would be an ongoing eternal cost for a very limited short-term benefit. That's not sustainable financially or environmentally. Methane inhibitors just make zero sense, especially when there is much better, more cost-effective ways to address climate change rather than putting synthetic chemicals into the food chain. Hence why a lot of farmers are so pleased to see the public's backlash against this stupid idea. As farmers, we are constantly told that the consumer is king. New rules, new regulations, we are told it's because the consumer is demanding it. But now the consumer has spoke loud and clear. No to synthetic chemicals like 3-nitrooxypropanol in the food chain. And yet what happens? Retailers dig their heels in and refuse to listen. This has exposed the reality of the situation. Consumer demand is often just a convenient excuse for a small number of people to push their agenda onto family farmers like me. If the consumer really is king, I think it's time the retailers listened and dropped the insanity of methane inhibitors. They make zero sense. Like, factually, zero sense. The fact they have even got this far tells me there must be a lot of money involved.
So there is hope in the sense that the public are aware and are kicking back and are holding on to a degree of common sense with this. So, that's Arla, Bova. And basically putting weird stuff in cows to save the planet. And praise you, we're seeing an element of kickback with that. Now, the second element I wanted to take a look at with farming is recent changes to our inheritance taxes or tax relief. When it comes to the farmers. So here in the UK, I don't know how it works elsewhere, but basically farmers have a degree of tax relief when it comes to inheritance. Standard procedure is, you know, you die, you have a certain amount of land, of assets, a certain amount gets taxed, etc. I'll just read through the government website. So reforms announced at the budget will help raise money to fix the public finances while protecting small family farms from unfairly high inheritance tax. Now, just to caveat this slightly, there is a history in the UK of left-leaning governments being in a kind of opposition to the more conservative farming communities. It's almost a bit like, dare I say, like old money and new money. It's a weird, but there's always been this, like, the farmers versus, you know, and I think that's the same in the States. Like, that's gone way back when it comes to like unions and having to fight the governments with regard to like trade prices and rules and stuff like that. So it's nothing new, and I think this is something that's been ongoing. And to be perfectly honest, this is probably something that would be irrelevant of whoever was in power. But so they've recently announced reforms with regards to the amount of inheritance tax to be paid. The government is committed to supporting farmers and rural communities, including helping families to pass their land on to the next generation. At the autumn budget in 2024, the Chancellor announced that agricultural property relief, APR, and business property relief, BPR, will be reformed. So what is agricultural property relief? Is a type of inheritance tax relief. It reduces the amount of tax that farmers and landowners must pay when farmland is passed to the next generation. Business property relief is similar. But for business assets that are part of the estate, now, I'm not an economist by any stretch of the imagination, but as I said, I really feel like it's to everybody's advantage that you make things as easy and as seamless and as good for these guys as possible, because everybody wins essentially. And for an industry where I know that the work itself is so hard, the hours involved, dedication, you know, the vulnerability to successes dependent on your crops and things like that, it's a very high risk and reward industry. But it just makes sense, you know, like, to look after them as much as possible. From the 6th of April, the full 100% relief from inheritance tax will be restricted to the first 1 million of combined agricultural and business property. Above this amount, landowners will access 50% relief from inheritance tax and will pay inheritance tax at a reduced effective rate of up to 20% rather than the standard 40%. Now, the good news is this can be paid in installments over 10 years interest-free. Oh, how generous. Rather than immediately, as with other types of inheritance tax. Now, the premise is that they use this tax to then subsidize and help the rest of society with the money that's taken from it, which, you know, it's the general principle of tax. But when the margins are so tight, anyway, it's backwards. It really is backwards. So again, people are kicking off.
Come on.
Cattle here have been looked after by Will's family since 1939.
Come on.
One day he hopes to hand the 500-acre farm in South Gloucestershire down to his son. But the government's new inheritance tax plans could make that difficult.
We've probably buried our head in the sand a little bit about it. I think back of a fag packet, rough estimates, tax is going to be north of 500,000.
Will would get 10 years to pay that bill.
Let's say that's £50,000 a year. You got that spare?
It's more than our profit in any year that we've had in the last 10 years. Dad's saying, are we going to have to sell something? It's worrying. It's worrying. It's an additional worry that we didn't need.
Will is one of thousands of farmers descending on London, angry at the government's proposals to charge 20% inheritance tax on farms over £1 million.
For farmers like Will and thousands of others, this isn't just about a huge new tax bill. Many see it as yet another stumbling block to getting the next generation of farmers to take over in an industry that already feels like it's under attack.
This isn't the first protest farmers have held this year. Hundreds rolled into Westminster back in March, angry at cheap imports. The National Farmers Union will gather 1,800 members to lobby MPs, but such is the level of frustration, many more are expected to protest on the streets.
We in the NFU, we have a detailed job to do, which is to explain to government why this is wrong, not just for farming, not just for the countryside, but and not just for our families, but for the economy in general. This is a bad tax and it's been badly implemented because it will affect growth and productivity in the country.
The government says only the wealthiest of estates will be impacted, with 72% of farms unaffected, a calculation the union says is wrong.
And so fourth generation, wow.
Yeah, I know, I signed up to it in blood.
It's why farmers like Will are leaving the countryside for the city to demand the government thinks again. Dan Whitehead, Sky News, in South Gloucestershire.
Yeah, so another area where the squeeze is being put on the farmers, and you know, well, some people say, well, they seem to be, you know, quite affluent, almost like the place where they live and the cars they drive, and even, you know, the way they talk. But that's the nature of it. They can have X amount of assets, but in terms of like cash, in terms of like profit, you know, that's that can be pretty volatile. So I personally don't begrudge any exemption. I don't feel a way about any exemption. Like I said, it's like what's in their best interest is in ours. But it's just this transitional period of time where we see, you know, natural industries and the ways that have been, the ways that we've depended on and used for generations and generations is being phased out, unfortunately. And, you know, the future with this does kind of look bleak, you know, as these global corporations get their tentacles into, you know, the everyday guy who wants to be self-sufficient, who wants to run his own business and to tend his land and to feed his family and to be comfortable in that sense. It's becoming harder and harder and harder. And I guess part of today's message is like, what can we do in terms of the support? And, you know, I think initially it's like, do we have to go hijack a tractor and ride through Westminster? I don't think so. But can we start making maybe slightly more informed decisions about, you know, where we're getting our things from? You know, can I sacrifice a bit more time to go to a butcher's farm shop? And again, like I said, financial restrictions and resources might come into play. I do understand that. But at the same time, is there more things that we can do to help the situation? I don't know. I'm not an expert. Anybody watching, if you've got any ideas or seen anything in action in your community or in and around your town, then please let us know. Now, the last element I just wanted to touch on can be surmised in this next video. And, you know, this principle really beggars belief. And again, I know there are going to be viewers who are familiar with the Monsantos of the world and the monopolization of the farming industry is something that that's been growing in its trajectory over the last 15-20 years. And the principles that are at play are just absolutely criminal. They're literally downright criminal in terms of what's being done. And this next video, I think, surmises just how insane this world has become.
Samuel Wathome is preparing the land for the upcoming rainy season. For this farming family, tilling and sowing the land is second nature. Wathome has been a farmer for over 30 years, practicing ecological farming using indigenous seeds and other natural resources.
And from time immemorial, farmers have been the custodians of seed. It is God-given, it's a gift from God. It is our heritage, it forms our culture, and it is what has been providing, sustaining our families.
The 67-year-old has always relied on traditional ways to diversify his crop. But generations later, the ancient tradition is under threat.
I and about other 14 farmers, smallholder farmers, have come together to challenge a law which was passed in 2012.
The legislation could make farmers in breach of the law if they share, exchange, or sell uncertified and unregistered seeds to fellow farmers.
What we are looking at is the erosion of the sovereignty of the people, and especially the smallholder farmers. And here I'm talking about seed sovereignty and food sovereignty, because food production begins from seed. So if the farmers have no control over the seed, then we are looking at a disrupted food chain.
According to Greenpeace Africa, smallholder farmers make up to 80% of the farming community.
Just want to touch on as well this principle of the degree of separation of it within the reality of consumption and where things come from, whether it be products, clothing, food. I feel like we're in a culture now where we're so distanced from the reality of where things come from and how things are made. You know, I mentioned there with the you know, the overproduction of the meat industry and the heinous things that take place. Now, I'm I'm definitely not a vegetarian in that sense, but you can see like the shocking things that have been manipulated and done in order to drive profit. And then we have a culture by which generations have no idea about the severity of what has gone into what's been put on their plate. And you know, even from a loose sense, when you think back to the days of the temple sacrifice, where you know, from just an outward perspective without any degree of understanding, you'd say, well, this is what a horrible system. You know, people killing innocent animals because they need to make a sacrifice to God to atone for, you know, their wrongdoings. It's terrible and it's barbaric. Well, it was meant to be in the sense that when people offered their sacrifice, it was with the heaviest heart. It was with a contrite and broken spirit, because this innocent animal is taking the punishment of the things that you've done. And it's the severity of the death of that animal. And you can't help but think that these farmers who raise animals and do it in a way that has been ordained for a very long time, they know the severity of what takes place when an animal is killed or a crop is gleaned. And, you know, the effort, the time, the connection, all of these elements are God-given. It's our connection to what's been ordained, you know, that we've been given dominion over the kingdom, which arguably has been lost through, Adam and everything else. But the point being, we have a generation that don't know the severity of where things come from and what it takes to put things on the table. I mean, even from the sense of growing up and going into a butcher's and seeing everything laid out on the counter, seeing the butcher, you know, cut the animal up, and you can almost smell the death in it. Like, there's a reality based on this system, as you know, however macabre that might sound, that's just the reality. And we have a generation that can just rock up to their local Tesco Express and eat the thing, and they just not giving it a second thought. And I think that makes us more malleable to accepting any future changes in the way that they do things. So what if it's been grown? So what if it's not a natural seed? So what if, like, people just don't know and don't care?
According to Nasike, the implications of this law, should it be implemented, are far-reaching.
Whoever is supplying us with the seed controls our food systems. They dictate what we eat. They dictate when we grow it and how we grow it. Because most of these certified seeds encourage the use of chemical fertilizers and chemical pesticides.
As their court case continues, Wathome and his fellow farmers are grappling to understand how this law was passed.
There are farmers that can't use the seed unless it's been provided by certain companies, because if it's found that they haven't used that seed, their assets can be seized. And again, it doesn't take much. You can look at the statistics of the effects of the unaliving of farmers across the world over the last 15 years. The rates have increased due to the pressures and the things that are happening to them. It literally beggars belief.
The law is out of touch with the common man. Yes, that's why I don't believe that there was meaningful public participation on it.
Stakeholders say that the government needs to amend or scrap these laws that give leeway for big multinationals and profit-driven entities to control local resources.
In this legal battle filed in September 2022, smallholder farmers want the courts to compel the government to review this law that punishes offenders with a jail term of up to 2 years or a fine of over $7,700, a sum that is out of reach for many small-scale farmers.
The law has galvanized the community, and their hope lies in joining forces with each other and appealing to the courts for their very survival. Alexandria Majala, TRT World, Machakos, Kenya.
So there we have a three-pronged attack on the farming community there. We've got the manipulation of the livestock and the product itself. You've got the financial restrictions and manipulation that's taking place on a wider frame. And then we've got the restrictions that are placed on honest people trying to do their best, but they can't because of a monopoly, essentially. Again, more questions than answers from myself. This isn't an area that I'm an expert in at all. But sometimes when you just see this, I just think it's important that while I have the opportunity to be able to do and say certain things and give voice to it, we should do what we can. And I think that is the main question, is what can we do in order to fight against it, whether it be making better choices with regards to where we do our shopping, where we get our produce, whether it be what we can do within our community to maybe have more self-sustainable elements. And even from a biblical perspective, is this something that's just going to escalate and get worse to a point where we are really having to depend on our own resources to even just be safe? I don't know. Again, as ever, get involved in the comments. If anything's touched you or you have an opinion, then it's most welcome. Again, like, subscribe, do all the good stuff. Much appreciate you joining me once more from our house to yours. This has been The Upper Room. Shalom. God bless. And we'll see you, Yah willing, on the next one.